You're listening to The Good, The Bad and The Interesting, a series of conversations about quality with Vasilis van Gemert and an eclectic mix of designers. In this episode, I have a conversation with Charis Roda, as we say in the Netherlands, or Charis Roda, as you may pronounce it in the rest of the world. Charis is a Dutch web developer and conference organizer based in Hong Kong. We spoke in a park in Düsseldorf in Germany, and I hope you don't mind listening to two Dutchies talking in English. We talk a lot about Hong Kong. Why did Charis decide to move? What is life like, both professionally and personally? And how does she find work as a freelancer? And of course, we talk about the differences between co-organizing a well-known conference in the Netherlands and setting up a completely new one in Hong Kong. But as usual, we start with the question, what makes a thing good?
I think in general, what makes something good is when somebody has put a lot of love in it.
Okay.
I think that's kind of like the main reason why stuff gets good. And that's got to do with, love also just comes from people put a lot of time in it. When does stuff get good? When people put a lot of time in it.
Okay.
Because I think most of the time when you start building something, you just don't have a clue. And you only get better at something when you have a certain interest and when you decide to put a lot of hours in it. And I think even when you're such a junior or something, and you do put a lot of time in it, stuff just gets better. And if you just keep on doing that, then eventually you will make something that's really good.
Okay.
And of course, some people are more talented and stuff. I think when you have a certain interest for it, then you are able to make something really good.
Okay. So you need interest, you need probably a little bit of talent.
Yeah.
A lot of time, that's something that you said.
Love.
And love.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so you have to like what you're doing.
I guess so. Right?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're done.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, good.
Sweet.
So, and what about one thing that you do is you organize conferences.
Yeah.
Right now we are here in Düsseldorf at the Beyond Tolerant, a very nice conference, if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I talked with Mark Thiele in a previous episode about what makes a conference good. What makes a conference good? You organize tell me about your conferences.
Yeah. So the one I'm organizing is WebConf.Asia in Hong Kong. I started that last year because one of the reasons was I kind of miss being a conference girl. It's just, I don't know. So I've done Frontiers for whatever, 4 or 5 years or so, learned how to do it. There was nothing in Hong Kong like that.
You used to organize conferences in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
You used to visit lots of conferences in Europe.
Yeah.
And then you moved to Hong Kong.
Yeah, on the last one, the year we moved to Hong Kong, I was chairing Frontiers, so that was kind of the last year. Also, my whole goal at Frontiers was to kind of do every little thing, so I knew how I would be able to run my own. And then I was in Hong Kong, and I thought, okay, I want to do this myself. I want to try if I can make it happen, because I just don't want to be just like your average web developer. I want to be whatever special, and I want to do that by organizing conferences. And I think it took me around 2 or 3 years to actually decide to do that. And the thing that really just got me doing that was because I talked with Luca from the front, who said, because my biggest concern was, how can I do this with a small budget? Because Hong Kong is, people in Hong Kong, they're not used to conferences. They don't earn that much money as people in the Western world. My biggest concern was, how do I sell tickets? And he said, okay, from the front in Italy, they started with a really small budget. And then I thought, okay, if they can do it, I should be able to do it as well. And I gave it a go. And first year, I put 500 hours in it, all non-profit. And it was one day, it turned out great. I had about 160 people visiting. People were really excited about it. So that was great.
Yeah.
It was indeed the hardest thing was selling.
Okay.
It still is.
Yeah.
It's not like a Beyond Tolerant or As a Frontiers, but as a Hong Kong web conference, like an Asian web conference, it's like a pretty good standard. My lineup this year is really good, so I'm really excited about it. There's so much stuff I more would like to do, but it's mainly just me.
But isn't it that the first 160? I don't remember, but I think the first Frontiers wasn't that big as
No,
it was probably that size.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird when you're coming from a Frontiers where it sells out 500 people, it sells out in 2 days, and then you just need to
ten minutes.
Man.
Yeah,
it really makes you feel like like when you're doing like such a big conference, you are really privileged. You have like a bag of money, you know, you'll sell out, so you don't have to worry about budget at all. And that's kind of like that's what I'm doing all the time. Does this fit in my budget?
Okay, so how's sales going? Is it going better this year, the second year?
No, it's going worse. Okay. But I also went from 1 day to 2 days.
Okay.
So last year was only a Saturday. Also, it was like the first conference, so people give it a go. Like, whatever. Even like friends bought a ticket because it was on a Saturday. This year, it's 2 days, so people need to take a day off. Taking a day off in Asia is not that easy.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's also like a bigger investment. So last year was around like 100 euros. This year it's 200. It's still really affordable, including lunch. But still, it's quite a lot of money for people who are not used to buying tickets to conferences. So it's harder, but it's getting there.
Okay.
And people are late buyers. So you just wait and wait.
Okay.
That's just the way it is, I guess.
Okay. So that sounds really like you're exploring a completely new world. Are there other things that are... I can imagine that there are other things that are completely different when you organize a conference over there. So yesterday we talked a little bit about the idea that here you have some people who want to volunteer and that something like that doesn't really exist there.
No, well, it's easy to find volunteers for the day itself.
Okay.
I'd love to maybe next year build a team. I haven't done that before with volunteers, so maybe that's not even that hard. I just don't know.
No.
I don't know. I think also what's a lot harder that like something I find really important when you organize a conference are your suppliers. Like who's doing your catering? Who's doing your tech stuff? And the good thing is if they do a good job, you don't have to worry about that on the day. And that makes everything a lot better and a lot smoother. And in Hong Kong, my projector, it is VGA. The sound is working and stuff, but it's not as fancy as a venue in Amsterdam, for example. And also like catering right now, I do have a good caterer, but it's I find it a lot harder to find really good suppliers.
Okay.
But eventually.
But that's because there's not really an industry of conferences.
Yeah. Or at least it's harder. And then again, like it's Hong Kong. It's not Vietnam. It's not whatever India or Thailand. So it's still not that bad. But it's harder.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you told me something about that people or businesses they always want something in exchange. That it's a much harder business-like environment.
Yeah. What I always say is like people in Hong Kong, they believe in money.
Okay.
And really everything is about money. And some people always say like, okay, people don't mind spending 200 US for a nice dress. But then when they need to pay 200 US for a conference, they're like, but that's too much.
Yeah.
So that's not easy. What else? Let me think. What was your question again?
So about the money that people are hard. It's business-like.
Yeah. And then also people, why should you just go somewhere? And if you can't, people really want to immediately apply it and want to see like, okay, how can I get money out of this stuff I learned today? So for example, there's in Ireland, there's Web Summit, and Web Summit are doing their own chapter in Hong Kong. It's called Rise, and Rise is really expensive. I think tickets start around 700-800, end up to whatever, like a 2000 US or so. What do people get? There are a few talks, but quality-wise, they're so-so. Most of them are sponsored. There are like a lot of booths, so people can sell their products.
Okay.
And that's where people care about. So people really want to sell their stuff, want to promo, want to network. And sometimes I find that kind of tiring because you just want to give people knowledge instead of where people can sell them, sell each other.
But it's still here in the Netherlands. I remember that it could be pretty hard to sell the more inspiring conferences to my bosses, for instance, that I wanted to go to, I don't know, deconstruct. And then, okay, but what will you bring back? So there's always has to be this practical side to it. So how do you do that with a lineup? Is there, do you consider these things when you think about the lineup?
Yes. Last year I had Vitaly Friedman from Smashing Magazine. He is kind of like, well, he's kind of like the biggest name, also like the biggest brand you can kind of get.
Yeah.
And even then people are like, oh, never heard of him. Which is kind of like, oh, okay. So what I'm trying to do is you're trying to get big names, and also you're trying to get big names from big companies, because you know the Googles and the Microsoft, they sell. And of course you want to have good talks, because if I pull off like a lineup with really shit talks, it's going to be useless, and also I would feel miserable, because after all it's my pet project, so I'm never going to have a lineup.
And nobody's going to come back.
I really think about that. And also sometimes I think, oh, okay, my lineup's going a bit more towards like the coding side, and I kind of know from Slack channels that people are eyeing on my conference, but I think, these people, they don't have that certain UX speaker yet, and then I'm going to search for that UX speaker and trying to get that person in. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I'm really concerned on the speakers I get and how they will convert to sales.
Okay, and what's the focus of the conference? So it's web?
It's broad. Conf- yeah.
Asia, but what about the web?
It's a conference for everybody who builds websites.
Okay.
And that's kind of like my tagline. It's from UX to design to front end to JavaScript to managers to startups kind. Also, I want to have it pretty broad. It is pretty broad.
Pretty,
because
it sounds, first of all, it sounds not that broad, because the web can be considered much bigger than just websites.
Yes.
But it's websites, and then everybody who earns a living with making them.
Yeah, okay. And I think when you are a UX designer, I think you should also listen to a coding talks for every now and then. And I think also when you're a JavaScript developer, you should have that design talk, because I think that's how you should build websites after all. Like, you should be all in one team and doing that together. And also my kind of goal is I want to have high quality talks. It's kind of difficult in a way, because you want to have high quality talks, but you also don't, you want that talk to be accessible for everybody. And that's what I'm trying to do.
I guess that's harder with the more technical talks.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't have a lot of technical talks. Because also I also kind of want to have the lineup that will be my favorite lineup. Because you always, that's what you do, right?
Yeah. And I think there are very specialized technical conferences at the moment.
Yeah.
So if you really need more knowledge about a certain JavaScript thing, then you.
Yeah, and also, well, there was like, I don't know, like 3-4 months ago, there was an article from Marco Arment about a conference that I did, which I thought was interesting, because also,
what conferences?
Our dad.
Ah, okay.
And one of the reasons was because people can go onto YouTube and they can look up everything. And then you can say like, oh yeah, that's not really a problem, because people still just want to have all the social bits. But then imagine when you're in Hong Kong and you're not earning that much money, then I think YouTube is a direct competitor to my conference, because people can look on all the talks online. If they want to get that certain Flexbox trick, they can just Google it and they can find it. So I think that way you should also just be able to add something special to it.
But then I think articles, blog posts are even more of a competitor, because
maybe, I
think videos are crap. I never watch a video, never.
Maybe. But then, it's more kind of like the general internet. That's just because there's so much stuff out there. Why can't you just get that free ebook instead of going to a conference?
Well, not sure, but sure.
I
still like conferences.
Oh, absolutely. No. Me too. But I thought it was kind of like an interesting angle.
Okay, so sales are going okay. You're working on other conferences as well, is that right?
Doing Smashing Conf, pretty recent. Yeah, so I don't know where that will be going.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool. I'm super excited. So I went to San Francisco 3 weeks ago or so. Really helped out the team. It was amazing. It's also, I think Smashing does a lot of stuff right. And in a way, what I kind of like is they do program big names, which I, in a way, I kind of do like that. Also, what I really like is they are really good with diversity, but they don't brag about it, which mm-hmm. I think is really cool.
Okay.
Their friendliness is cool. So, like, their high level of quality is really good. Like, I don't know, the stuff is in the details. Just that's what I really like. And they're a really friendly bunch of people. So, yeah, I'm really excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you get to work on very, very high quality conferences around the world.
Yes.
Which
and
is
that's
exciting as
that's
well.
Really nice. And yeah. In a way, I also noticed that with the stuff I did for Frontiers and the stuff for WebConf, that I actually have a pretty solid base, like a pretty solid knowledge base, which is kind of like surprising. Like, okay, like there is indeed like a pattern you see in every conference, and you got like the same stress moment in the morning and in the lunch. That's all the same. And it's also interesting to see how people do stuff differently. And that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah. So if you look at Frontiers, it's, there's lunch. I think one of the things that I really like about Mark Thiele's conferences is that there's a huge lunch break. You have to...
Yeah.
Take care of your own lunch.
Yeah.
After every talk, there is a break.
Yeah.
So these are the personal things about his talk, his conferences
that I really like. Yeah, and I think also that in general, well, that's also really got to do with like the whole subject love. That's something that makes a conference good. Like, because he just puts in like a lot of personal preferences, that makes it special.
Yeah.
Because, well, you also, so every now and then you see like a conference been organized by like a company or so.
So are there any Gares Roda details to conferences?
Wow. My God.
I mean, I can recognize a Mark Thiele conference from a distance.
Not enough yet, I guess.
No?
Well, no, because... It's just, I'm still building it up.
Yeah.
I'd love to do more. I think in general, what I kind of hoped to do is get, when you invite speakers, you kind of want to have them match together really well.
Okay.
And I think this year that's going to work out really well.
Okay, so I have a solid program.
Yeah. And then also when all the speakers know each other, they get to mention each other on the stage all the time.
Okay.
And that way, I think you just get... It makes it kind of more magical or so. So I think that's one of the things. I'd love to do 1,000 more things, but it's just me.
Yeah.
No, I think give it a few more years.
It's just you.
Yeah.
And it's also... it's not really what you earn your living with yet.
No.
So it's not a full-time job.
No.
It's next to your job.
Because...
Yes. In your daily life, you make websites.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've always been a freelancer, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I worked for a company like total 3 years or so, the beginning of my career.
But that's a long time ago.
That's a long time.
So ever since I know you, you've been freelancing pretty successfully.
Yeah.
First in the Netherlands, and then suddenly you decided, now I'm going to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So tell me about the differences about working in the Netherlands and working in Hong Kong.
Oh, it's a world of difference, really. When we just moved to Hong Kong, the first kind of thing we wanted to have sorted out was our visa. And the best way to get a visa is to get a job.
Okay.
And then when you have a Dutch passport, it's pretty easy to get a visa. So I had like a local job, had a visa in whatever, 6 weeks, all good. So I started working at that local company, and I was surrounded by really lovely people who were also pretty smart. But the culture is really different. So there's really like a strong hierarchy. It is really like a bunch of code monkeys or design monkeys or whatever they are. But you are all kind of like monkeys working in the same factory.
Okay.
instead of... Like, this is like a very local Hong Kong company. I kind of can imagine that agencies do it differently, but it's still pretty much like that. So it doesn't have to do that much to do with a creative process. More like, oh, we just saw something, we're just going to copy it. And yeah, that's when you're coming from Europe, that just feels really, it's wrong, but also stupid, because hey, you know what? Well, like also what we've just seen at Beyond Talent, it's fine to get your inspiration everywhere, but you don't want to copy stuff straight because it's been built with a purpose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you copy it, you just take away the whole purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember it was sure it was like, okay, we want to take away a few filters. Okay, I just get that because you have like a product page and there are a lot of filters and you want to reduce that from 5 to 3. So I did some research, Google Analytics, you can measure it all. And then after whatever, like I just had it all done and it was like, okay. And then my boss saw just like a nice page somewhere, say we're going to do it like this and we're going to get these filters. Super random. And I just, that's just something I could not understand.
Yeah.
And
is that typically Hong Kong or is it just a bad design agency? Because it sounds like something that can happen in the Netherlands as well.
Yeah, I think I think also in general, Hong Kong is whatever, like web-wise, whatever, 10 years behind.
Okay.
So it is, yes, it will also happen in Holland. I think all the stuff that happens in Hong Kong, that whatever, I think that shouldn't happen, used to happen in Holland, but Holland or like Europe moved on and are not doing that anymore because Hong Kong still feels like backwards.
Okay.
Also, there's a lot less money available for web.
Okay.
So
how come? Why is there?
Maybe it's still the thing that people are not willing to pay for pixels, like the old school. And also.
So is it more of a, are there fewer services, online services? Do people still pay with cash or something like that?
Yeah, that is, yeah.
Because that's the same thing here in Germany. And some people say that if you compare Germany to the Netherlands digitally, that Germany is a bit behind.
Yeah, I don't know whether that has got anything to do with it. Because in a way, it's really weird because I don't think there's one other city in the world that you see that much expensive cars.
Yeah.
So, after all, there is money.
Mm-hmm.
Housing prices are the highest in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
People are not willing to pay for websites.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really weird. And I think also sometimes I really wonder, also like the question like what is good? Sometimes I think in Hong Kong it's quite easily it's good enough. For example, when you have like a little shop somewhere, why would you have an online shop? Because that just probably won't help you sell more products. Because mm-hmm. people in Hong Kong, they like to go shopping, so they will go to your shop and they won't go to your Shopify shop.
Okay.
And then also,
makes sense.
It does make sense. No? Yeah.
It doesn't really matter, right?
No.
No.
And then also in Holland, when like a certain website, so you want to buy whatever, something like something premium-ish, and their website is shit, you would tell your friends, ah, but they had a really bad website. Ugh. But then in Hong Kong, every website is just really shitty.
Okay.
So, you know, that website is bad. And you're like, oh, like it doesn't... Like you just still trust their website. You just still enter, at least that's what I do. Call me stupid. You still enter your credit card details, the whole website, the layout is all over the place. And you still just get your stuff delivered. Because websites are just a lot more ugly.
Yeah.
And they're 20% the price. It still converts. It's fine, right?
Yeah. It's a pity because I thought actually that your website, the website that you made for your conference, is just fantastic. I mean, that's internationally, I think that's one of the best designs or most beautifully designed websites. And I thought this is Hong Kong style.
Nice.
But it's
I didn't even
I thought
every
website looks like that in Hong Kong.
Yeah. I think also one of the reasons when I thought, hey, I wanna organize a conference that just really makes a difference. I can make a difference with a really good design.
Okay, yeah.
That was the reason. But no, it's sadly not like that.
Okay, that's a pity.
Yeah.
That's a real pity. Because then I thought, okay, we should all move to Hong Kong and learn, or at least go and learn how to make websites.
Yeah.
Are there good things about this people not willing to pay, so being on a lower budget, having maybe more restrictions? Well, does that work out?
Well, sometimes. Well, what I find interesting in Holland. Well, sometimes, for example, you should just put it online, right? And people are like, "Oh, in Holland or Europe, oh, it's not good enough. It's not good enough."
Okay.
Just put it online. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
So that's in a way that's what I do like. What I also I think in Hong Kong, everything is about money. And when you have a lot of money, you can always have more money. While in Europe, when you have a lot of money, you can have more free time. You can have more time with your kids. You can, and sometimes I wish that people in Europe would give like that little extra. Instead of just at 5 o'clock, oh, it's five, turn off the computer, run out of the office, it's done. Sometimes I think when you give that little extra, you just make it a lot better.
Yeah.
Just work a little harder. And that's also kind of what I, or at least that's also more maybe like a kind of like a China thing than a Hong Kong thing, because China is going so much faster than Hong Kong. Hong Kong is kind of standing still.
Okay.
And that's sometimes what I like in China. Like in China, you actually can get the good, the fast, and the cheap. You can get all three of them. And I think that's awesome. And that's what, like, why is China doing so well? Because they manage that. And of course, they're not there yet. Of course, they just copy stuff and it doesn't look that good. But for example, for my conference, I source a lot of stuff from China. And the stuff I get, it's good. And I communicate with them in English. And their English is not perfect, but it makes sense. And after a while, you get it. And it's nice. And I just get it fast.
Yeah.
Instead of in Holland, like, oh, I don't know, and then you have to wait for 2 weeks because whatever. I think sometimes also kind of like an ego thing, like in Holland, they're like, oh yeah, this project is not big enough for me, blah blah. And I just, if I just make like a really small order in China, I just get samples, I get email, I get replies in 2 hours on really weird time because they're still working.
Okay.
And that's great.
Okay, and so a while ago I talked to Peter Bielak of the Typotech Type Foundry.
Yeah.
And when I asked him what makes a thing good, he said that everybody involved with the product, so when you talk about the product, everybody involved in the product should be happy. And with the product, so that means the person buying it, of course, the business people have to be happy with it because they have to earn a living, but also the people making it. And when it comes to China, well, my idea is that not everybody's happy there.
And
you are very happy. The business obviously is very happy because China is doing great on that field.
Yeah.
How about the people, or I don't know.
I think that's one of also like the good things about China. Sometimes when you just freelance, you're being paid to do stuff, and of course your whole goal is to build the best thing possible. But sometimes you're also just paid to shut up.
Okay. Yeah.
And sometimes I don't agree with stuff. And sometimes I think, oh, I really want to have this different because everybody's going to lose. And sometimes I also think, you know what? I just get paid for this. I'm just going to say yes. I'm going to build. I don't fully agree with it.
Okay.
But let's just move on.
I had a big problem with that as a freelancer. I used to be hired as the problem solver. So other people created problems.
Yeah.
And then I was hired to fix them. And then all of a sudden I had this name that I could fix problems, but that was not what I wanted to do.
Nice.
So that's when I quit freelancing.
Yeah, nice.
So tell me about the web. So where is it going? Because I haven't been working professionally on the web for a while.
Puh. I hope it's going into the right direction, but I'm not sure.
And what's the right direction and what could go wrong?
I think the whole open web is the right direction.
Okay.
I don't think Facebook is the right direction.
Okay.
I'm not that visionary. I do have concerns about services like Facebook, Instagram, these kind of like container kind of things where everybody's going to put their stuff in, which is of course really convenient.
Yeah.
Oh, but I don't know, man.
Okay, and how about technology then? Let's get back to what we use. So CSS.
Yeah.
That's what you work with mostly, right?
Yeah. I think CSS is heading into a great direction. Like the CSS grid, the layout stuff, it's really cool.
Yeah.
I like the whole community about it. It goes really fast. I think... Yeah, that's just super exciting. What I also do notice that like the whole internet, it's still being more and more bootstrappy, or more general. And that's something.
So what do you mean by that? More bootstrapping?
Well, just more. It all looks the same.
Ah, okay.
Fast food. And I think there are kind of two kind of problems, because in a way, to build a good website, it takes a lot of work.
Okay. Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of love. So when you go to an agency and you say, hey, I want a super fancy website, it's going to cost you a really big bag of money. On the other hand, if you want to mock up something super fast, you get a very, whatever, fast food design, which is super bland. And that's where most of the people choose.
Yeah. You can also say that for most businesses, that's good enough.
It is good enough.
Yeah.
So yeah, but that's not the stuff that excites me.
No.
And I think also one of the reasons why I built the WebConf website, or why the whole WebConf website is as weird as it is, because I think there should be more websites like that.
Yeah.
It should be more exciting. It also should be usable. Mm-hmm. But there's hardly a website that really excites me. Excites me as in, I'm not a really big fan of all this, the fancy whatever, React, Angular, fancy moving stuff. But then the stuff you can do with native HTML, and you kind of get that print type of design, kind of like the good typography mixed with kind of like interesting grids, and you apply that to the web, and I think that's magic.
Yeah.
But I think to do that, you need somebody who's really good at UX design, and you need a good front-end developer, and you need to get those two people and make them work together.
Yeah.
And that's still a problem.
And probably a good visual designer with, I mean, if you apply these things, the classic grid and typography theory to the web, it gets really, really interesting. I agree with you that I think this has not been investigated enough.
No.
Not at all.
And it's interesting, for example, the designer who made my WebConf style, he is not good at web.
Okay.
So he really made something super visual, just a PDF.
Yeah.
And I translated it to web.
Okay.
And I think you can still kind of bridge that gap together.
Yeah.
But you should really sit next to each other and then build cool things. And also have a lot of time and love, because otherwise it will never get there.
Yeah, does it really need that much time? I don't know. When I can create a website in a... I'm still fluent in CSS. Doesn't really take me that much time.
No, I think building just the website, you can do that. Like my I make websites. I just really made that in one day. I was just sick of the old, make a new one. The thing to make it really good, it takes days, weeks.
Then it's the details.
Yeah, and then that, when you see a website like that, it's really exciting.
Yeah, and the bigger the website, the more details. Yeah, of course, that takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the thing that I was always bad at planning. Because I always thought, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just want to get it over with or something.
Yeah. So there's grid, and there's... Do you use CSS grid a lot in your projects? How's the browser world over there? So do you have to think about old browsers?
No, also because I still mainly just work for Dutch clients.
Ah, okay.
And then also most of the time, I've done some work for Asian clients, and most of the time it's been painful. Even Western clients that's been living in Hong Kong for a while, you turn more Asian.
Ah, okay.
So probably I will be spoiled in a few years as well.
Yeah. Okay. So what does that mean? More painful? Why?
I think I charge my European rates in Hong Kong. And I think also that way people expect a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think most of the time I just can't compete with local people, which totally makes sense. Because if you have somebody who works for like half the price, and also if kind of like the whole quality check is like that website should be online with 5 menu items, then... That Asian person is probably will meet the criteria a lot better than I will.
Yeah.
Because, hey, you just check the boxes for half the price or even less, because they probably will be faster too.
Yeah.
So that just doesn't work, I guess. Which is okay. So I just still mainly work for Dutch clients. Most of the time, the designs you get, because I still mostly work with designers and then do front end, is not that suitable for grid, sadly. It's most of the time mainly just fax box or just positioning stuff.
Okay.
But it's still just three blocks, four blocks. It's not, you hardly see those really interesting layouts with a lot of white space and have an image on the left top.
So
and
is
right
that because of, do the people who design these sites maybe not know that it exists?
I guess
exists?
So, or they're just not. They're not excited about it enough, maybe still, or they just still need to.
Or maybe they don't know what can be done with it.
Yeah.
Because that's also a thing. This is new technology, but I have the idea that we're mimicking what you said, bootstrap websites with
yeah.
it. So the things that we know, and we're doing it now with grid, but
yeah.
we're not experimenting with what
no.
what is this new material?
No. Well, I think also still people still have trouble with responsive as well. It just takes time.
Yeah.
Like for a response of like how long ago was that, and still designers just don't really know how stuff should flow, for example.
Yeah.
So hey, it takes time.
Yeah.
Okay,
so I was actually hoping that the state of the web would be a little bit more would have advanced a little bit more since I quit working, but
now you're talking to me.
Okay, so I still have to do my job as a teacher
and
teach the next generation
yep.
to design for the web.
And to experiment with it and to make crazy things, right?
Okay. So there's actually still reason to complain, because I used to complain. And you always used to bitch at me that I shouldn't be complaining.
Did I?
I should be solving problems. But there's actually still reason to complain, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, for me.
Yeah.
You don't complain that much, I guess.
I don't know. Do I?
No.
I don't know.
No.
Well, I think, geez, stuff just got a lot better. But then also, if you don't complain, how can you make stuff better? If you just don't, if you don't see how you can improve stuff, then
yeah.
if everybody's just happy, then we just,
well,
right?
It is a concern of me. I really believe that some people think, well, this is it.
Yeah.
We're done. We
yeah.
know how we should design for the web. This is web UX. This is how
wow.
the web should look.
And that would be have like a happy state of mind, maybe, for
yeah,
me.
There's certain people who say, yeah, they really believe this. Yeah.
We're
done.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would be pretty disappointed, because I know there's much more possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
Any other techniques that excite you about?
Not much, really.
About CSS?
No. Sometimes when kind of people ask me what excites me, I thought responsive design was really exciting, because with just two lines of code, you can change the world, kind
yeah.
of like the whole web world.
Yeah.
I think also with CSS Grid and CSS Layout, it's really cool. Maybe stuff like Vue.js is interesting, because
okay.
it works. I haven't worked with it yet. Also, I'm doing less and less front-endy stuff, more organizing stuff,
okay,
also
yeah.
because I think that's just stuff that excites me a lot more recently.
Yeah.
I think stuff like Vue.js, where you can make stuff interactive in like a really simple way, is actually just cool, because it's so, maybe that's what I like. When something's really simple and you can make kind of like whatever complicated stuff with it, I think that's maybe what I really like.
Okay. I haven't really used Vue. I've used it when it was just out, I think. There was a hackathon of Q42.
Yeah.
And I was there and they used Vue. And what I remember of it, that it actually, that you don't need inheritance, that you can actually use CSS on a per. But that's all I remember of that.
I don't know.
No.
What I do know, like, it's been written by Evan Yu, and he is originally a front-end developer and not a back-end developer.
Okay.
So that kind of makes it like, and that I think
that's
also, that's why people like it, because it got like some sort of simplicity.
Okay.
I think, yeah, but I haven't properly worked with it, so what do I know?
Yeah, because that was actually a pretty big problem that we had, all these Adobe designers who didn't know anything about interactivity and who didn't care anything about how the web really works.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, all these backend developers started.
Yeah, and that's when you get Bootstrap and
web.
Stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you just get, yeah, you get all these class.
Yeah, yeah.
Class poo, whatever.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so you say you work so you work remotely. I always thought you had local clients over there.
No.
Okay, so you just have a big user base or client base in the Netherlands still.
Yeah, that's still growing. And still working for clients I used to work. Like, I must say, it's not as exciting as it used to be, because, for example, if you're running a Scrum project on site in the Netherlands, is of course a lot more exciting than when you're sitting behind your computer and just doing some front end stuff. It's never, because some people say, remote work, it's amazing. I think sometimes it's so important just to sit next to somebody when you can just point at the same screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can try to get that with Skype, but it's
but you're in such a completely different time zone as well.
No, but that's fine, because you just get used to that. It's 6 hours right now. So I'm not a morning person. In a way, it's really good, because by the time people wake up in Holland, which is around 3 p.m, so my morning is always really relaxed, and I'm not a morning person, so around 3 o'clock people just start emailing me, and by that time I can handle all the bullshit, which is great.
Okay, wow.
So I must say, and also you have like that extra half a day where you can prepare stuff. For example, when you're not really good at planning, which I am in generally am, but you still have half a day to solve stuff, and then you're kind of just being ready at 9 o'clock in the morning when they just wake up, which is kind of refreshing for me as well.
That sounds good as well. Yeah, so it has its advantages, obviously.
Yeah.
But I remember that as well. I used to miss colleagues. That was the other reason why I stopped working as a...
That's not easy.
Okay, and are there any co-working spaces, things like that? So you go there?
Yeah, I work from a co-working space, lovely co-working space. They have a so it's called The Hive, and they have a maker hive where there are makers as well. I must say, I have never made anything in there, because somehow I'm a nerd and sit behind my computer. But
making nowadays is mostly behind a computer, and it's so much fun.
Oh, it is. But then they have like whatever 3D printers and that type of stuff. And I've never used them, which in a way is a shame. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's also just not really my priority or so.
No.
I don't know. And it's fun to share that floor, because it's with interior designers, it's with 3D designers. And it's interesting to see that everybody is kind of like designing something, and every process is pretty much the same.
Okay,
and that's what I really enjoy. So you can have kind of like the same type of conversations with completely different people, kind of, but you're all doing designs or you're all creating. And I find that really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's really
such
cool.
A creative hub is really nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want to, you can have access to all these 3D printers and laser cutters and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and then also like Shenzhen is just across the border. So Shenzhen is kind of like the hardware city. What you also see a lot, you have a lot of product designers who are based in Hong Kong, because you rather live in Hong Kong than Shenzhen, because Shenzhen is properly China. And if you want to, you just design your stuff in Hong Kong, and then you have your stuff made in Shenzhen or in Guangzhou, like one of those factories.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a well-known kind of, that's kind of how it works over there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So you said Shenzhen is China proper, something?
Yeah, like properly China, like really, like including firewall, including everything's Mandarin, nothing is in hardly anything is in English. It's China, and China is really different still from Hong Kong.
Okay, tell me about that.
Let's see. Where should I start?
So there's a firewall.
Yeah.
Well, in China.
There's a firewall in China. So Hong Kong is like a special administrative region of China.
Yeah.
But still, Hong Kong's got its own passport, its own law, its own currency. Right now we're in like the 50-year window.
Okay.
I think we're around halfway or so. I don't even know where exactly.
Yeah.
And that means in whatever years, when that window is finished, Hong Kong will become properly Chinese. That's kind of like an official date when it becomes Chinese. But what you do notice, it's getting more and more Chinese every day.
Yeah.
And also, when you look at China right now, where you kind of expect the whole world to become more free and become better, that's not what's happening in China. China's becoming more and more closed. So their firewalls Like they're cutting down more and more VPNs, and they're getting up their whole surveillance system where they're surveilling everybody with the technique. Apparently, they can build that.
Yeah.
So I don't think China is becoming a better place right now.
Okay.
And that's worrying. And then also Hong Kong is also getting more and more Chinese. So what you see, there were some booksellers who were selling Chinese books, and then suddenly they were just taking over the Chinese border overnight. China just come and get them. And I think also when you kind of like from Chinese heritage, they can get you from kind of everywhere. It's really weird how China sees that. And that's something that Hong Kong is really freaking out about, it because what's going to happen when Hong Kong is going to be fully Chinese? There probably will be a firewall. Like, what will the law be? You just don't know.
Yeah.
So Hong Kong people are looking for a way out, trying to get passports in Australia, trying to get passports in Canada. And it's weird.
And this is especially a certain type of people who value their freedom or value...
Of course it's more the higher class people. Also, they have more access to a way out. Like they have their kids study in the U.S. And that way they can obtain a passport. But that's worrying, because I think half of the people under 35 want to leave the country. And that's weird.
Yeah.
And it's like a weird place to live in, where if people want to leave. But still, people really like Hong Kong.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because people go to live there, right? You moved from the Netherlands to Hong Kong.
And also, I am living in a bubble, because when shit hits the fan, I just get my stuff, take my passport and leave. So living... being European and living in Hong Kong, you do live in a bubble.
Okay.
And yeah.
So do you live like an expat? So is that
half?
Well, yeah. Well, is it?
In a way. Well, we're not these super rich bankers who are just whatever, snorting cocaine every weekend and spending all our money on booze. But you live a really different life than locals. Yeah, you do. Yeah.
And you don't mingle with locals, is that as well?
You do, because I do have some local friends, but also most of them already been abroad.
Okay.
Like, for example, if you think about how many people do you know that are expats in Amsterdam?
Wouldn't come to mind. Anybody.
So I think just in general, expats or whatever, people who come from abroad don't mingle that much anyway.
Well, I don't know any... expats, but I do know people who moved to Amsterdam and who decided to live in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference.
Yeah.
So there's people who decide to live elsewhere and people who are expats and consider themselves Dutch, who don't really move.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're somewhere in between or so, because Hong Kong does feel like home.
Yeah.
And we might stay there for another 15 years, and maybe for the rest of our lives. I just don't know.
No.
But I also, in a way, we're also expats, because we're definitely not like the locals.
No.
But we're also not as, in general, expats are extremely privileged and also pretty rich. Mm-hmm. And we're not like that. Well, we are privileged, but we don't have a banking salary. So
No. Okay. But you do have a higher salary than...
Well, not everybody. When you look at all the expensive cars, you think like, hey, I would never be able to.
Okay.
So there are also like a lot of really rich Hong Kong and Chinese people.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, sure. Yeah. There's a lot of money going on right now.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah.
Okay, so and why did you move, actually? Never really understood. Well, I do understand reasons to leave but
I fell in love with the city.
Yeah.
Man, the city's just crazy. It's just, I think it's really just how do you fall in love with stuff. Sometimes you don't even really know, right? It's just a certain feeling. Why do you like it? I think what I really like about Hong Kong, all the different contrasts.
Okay.
So east meets west, but also concrete meets nature.
Okay.
High rise meets low rise.
China meets...
Yeah.
The UK or Britain or something. Yeah.
Rich meets poor. That's what I like about it. I also like big cities.
Okay.
I don't know. We just fell in love with the city.
And the food is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the food is, yeah. Yeah, well, I just, if you like Asian food, it's good. Well, and also, like, during lunch, we always go out for lunch. So we always have, I have really good Asian lunches, which is really nice.
Okay, yeah. And Dutch food? Can you get any Dutch food?
Well, you can eat Dutch food there.
Yeah, the Dutch restaurants.
Yes, yeah, there's one.
Okay.
I've never been, actually.
No.
No, we kind of trying to stay away from the super, like some people, like there's like this Dutch organization, and I don't have the urge to just become a member at all. Why should I do that? Why should I move to the other side of the world to hang with Dutch people again? Yeah. We have Dutch friends, but then that's just, it happened to be.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
So there's one or two Dutch restaurants in Amsterdam as well.
Oh, in Amsterdam?
Yeah.
Dutch.
Yeah, they really say we are Dutch and we have Dutch food. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not like the Van Dobben Croquette Bar.
No. It's more in the center of Amsterdam.
Really? That's weird, though.
Yeah. Stamppot. You can eat stamppot.
Oh, it's nice, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't mind.
No.
Yum.
Okay. Do you have any other stuff you want to discuss on this podcast? Anything you want to tell the...
Good question.
The listeners.
I don't know. No, I don't know. No, not really.
Okay. No. So people just should go to Hong Kong, visit your conference.
Yeah, they should. Yeah, they should.
And visit all your conferences in around the world for smashing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you as well.
This was episode number 60 of The Good, the Bad and the Interesting with Vasilis van Gemert, that's me, and with Karis Ruda. If you feel the urge to give any feedback, you are more than welcome. Of course, you can send me an email via vasilis@vasilis.nl, or if your feedback fits in a tweet, you can find me on Twitter via @Vasilis. Another thing you can do is helping me pay the bills for the transcripts of this podcast. These transcripts are necessary for those of us who can't or who don't want to listen. They're handy for robots or people who want to analyze the contents of these conversations as well. Support can be done in many ways, and they all make me very happy. You can find all options on vasilis.nl/support, like Bitcoin, Patreon, or a virtual cup of coffee. A steadily growing list of wonderful people are donating monthly, like Paul van Buren, Job, and my employer CMD in Amsterdam. My next conversation is going to be with Maaike de Laat, and it's going to be in Dutch.